Attention entrepreneurs and business owners. It's time to stop working so hard, start working smart, and build a business that stands on its own.
Generate real wealth, real freedom,
and a real legacy.
Now from New York City, small business champion and business attorney, helping thousands of entrepreneurs generate hundreds of millions of dollars. Here's Nina Kaufman, and this is the Cash Out Big Podcast.
Hey, how are you? Nina Kaufman here. Welcome back to Cash Out Big. Hope you're doing well and that your year is off to a great start. So hey, if this is your first time or maybe you've been listening for a while, this is the Cash Out Big podcast, and we are sharing the tools and the tips to help you grow and scale your business so it can really start to run without you. And that's one of the things we're going to be talking about with our guest, Dr. Curtis Odom, today, about how can you get the stuff that's out of your head, that unconscious competence, and share that with your teams so that you can have a life and run your business. And those are some of the things we talk about here on Cash Out Big. So thank you. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm glad you're here. Now, one of the challenges I see with a lot of business owners, and I sort of have my hand raised sheepishly here as well, is that very often for those of us in business consulting sector and creative type companies, when we started a business, it's partly what we loved. It's the work that we really love to do, and we got comfortable with it. But then there reaches a point where there's a ceiling of growth, isn't there? That it just stops. It can't be so focused on you. It can't be so dependent on you. Otherwise, there's no place to go. You know, there are no more hours in a day. And also, let's face it, there's only just so much that we're going to be able to do really, really well, because a business is multidimensional. It takes a lot of different kinds of skills, a lot of different ways of thinking. And our brains don't always perform excellently in all of those areas. And that's often one of the reasons that we are running like a hamster on a wheel when it comes to our business, because we started with some stuff that we did really, really well. But to have a business that grows means there's so much more that we needed to learn. But we can't be good at all of it. And that's something that we talk about in our video training at businessexponential.com. We can't be good at all of it. So how can we identify what are those things that really just are not our strong suit, understand what needs to be done, but get the expert to do it well and recognize when they're doing it well? That's part of what it means to be a business leader and to step forward. So some of the things that I've encouraged my clients to do are to really look at how they're spending their time, how much of it is stuck in the day-to-day, as our guest calls it, administrivia, and how much of it is in the higher level business development, branding, white glove client service. So take your time, really. Take a timesheet. Look at how you're spending your time. Maybe take a week to look at this, or a month, or maybe go back and look at your calendar, but just see, where are you spending your time? For a lot of business owners, they're tempted to just throw money, people, automation at the problem without understanding exactly what's going on within their business. So when you have that information, when you have that data, then you're better able to make smarter decisions about what you can take off your plate. So you can take that 2-week unplugged vacation, and you do know what information needs to be shared with your team. And that's something that we talk about with our guest, Dr. Curtis Odom, today. Dr. Odom is a mergers and acquisitions advisor who really focuses on what happens after two companies come together. What is the integration? And that means he has a deep understanding of people and strategy and planning. And in particular, how does knowledge get transferred so that what you end up with is really a seamless, functioning, growth-focused entity? And that has a lot of application for small businesses too, because there's so much for owners of business consulting and creative firms where it's all in our head. How do we get that unconscious competence out of our heads and shared with our team so that there can be that knowledge transition and that knowledge transfer? So I'm really looking forward to talking with him and getting his insights here on Cash Out Big. Dr. Odom, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much. It's a great opportunity.
Great. So what I wanted us to chat about, because I know you've dealt with this with your clients, and I believe you've dealt with this in your own business, that problem of if you can't be replaced, you're trapped. You know, you want to step away. I know you just had a wonderful trip for about 12 days. But if you can't step away, even for 2 weeks, 4 weeks, or all together, you're really stuck in your business. So Where do you see that business owners kind of get stuck in that, in their business, and not able to move forward?
Sure. And that's a great question. And just to say again, thank you so much for having this opportunity. We just did get back from a trip of working with clients outside of the country. And, you know, that's a conversation topic that has come up quite often over the past, I'd say maybe 6 months or so, is the fact of, you know, how as a business owner can I have a life and run the business when for so long, you know, running the business was my life. And, you know, the thing that we are really having conversations with business owners about is the fact of there's two different aspects to them running the business. There's the, you know, the presence component, which is, you know, them being there, walking the halls, kind of connected to everything that is the, you know, the working on of the business, if you will, you know, that public face, that connection with clients, partners, what have you. But then is the working in the business. And we try to really work with business owners to get them to understand what percentage of their time is spent working on the business and what percent of their time is working in the business. And even as an entrepreneur myself, you know, now having my firm 5 years old and counting, which is a beautiful thing and is very exciting and rewarding. I would say really about 2 years ago, Nina, I really sat down and I did that math for myself and said, you know, how much of my time am I spending working on the business and how much of the time am I spending working in? And what I realized is that the working on of the business, that's portable. I can be anywhere in the world, be working on the business, whether that's, you know, emailing clients, making connections, what have you. But the working in the business, I needed to delegate that. I needed to figure out, you know, what are the things that are absolutely essential to the running of my business day to day, week to week, month to month, and then figure out which of those things do I absolutely have to do, meaning I'm the only person that can do them, and which things can I delegate to my team. I have a wonderful team of six other individuals who are of similar background, similar zeal, and great experience. And I said, you know what, how much of these things am I hoarding away from my team when I should be sharing that? And by doing that, it did a few things. One, it gave me bandwidth and it gave me space, but it also gave them the opportunity to be more engaged and to step up and to, you know, really have more of a working with me for being in the business rather than working for me.
Great. So stepping back just a half step, looking at what percentage of your time are you working on the business versus in the business? How did you figure that out? Did you just sit down with a piece of paper and like a timesheet and say, all right, this is what I'm doing? Because that's very often where business owners get stuck in the sense of, well, I don't know. And how am I supposed to capture this anyway?
Right. No, it's a great question. What I did is, you know, fairly unscientific. What I did is I took a look at my calendar for 90 days back. So I looked at a quarter of my year, and I looked at all of the meetings, all of the tasking that I specifically had been involved in. And I said, okay, let's take a look at this. And each day, you know, is planned out, even though each day is different than the one before and the one certainly to follow. I could look at my calendar and see where I was spending my time. And I took that opportunity and I made two buckets. And I said, okay, was this a working on the business, meeting, task, conversation, what have you, or working in? Meaning specifically, how much of this was customer facing, how much of this was, you know, furthering the brand, how much of this was really driving business development, what have you. So that very much was working on the business. And then there were other things like, okay, well, you know, drafting of reports or doing data analysis or some administrative work, whether that's budgeting or, you know, forecasting or whatever those different things that might be, I call administrivia. How much of my time was spent on that? And when I looked at it, what I realized, you know, when I first sat down to do that 2 years ago, is that I was doing about 50% of my time in each. And I think that the reason why I was spending so much of my time there is when I started my business, like most entrepreneurs and people who would be listening to this podcast, you know, I started out lean. I bootstrapped my business. I did most of the work myself. I was really the head cook and cleaner, baker, bottle washer, everything for the business. And I never got out of that mold. Even though I started to add staff, even though I was growing and everything else, there are certain things that I just never really let go of, either from the doing or for the, you know, the ownership of. You know, I might have had some folks do some tasks for me, but I still kept that on my calendar. I still kept that top of mind. So when I looked at that and said 50-50, I said, okay, let's move that back. I wanted to get to 75-25, 25% being the administrative, and more of a, you know, listening to status reports or updates or what have you from those that were going to really own the work. So I made a clear choice to say there are certain things that I need to be accountable for, meaning I own it, you know, straight away, and that's pretty much everything as the business owner. But there are some things that I say, you know what, I could delegate all of the responsibility, in other words, delegate all of the work component to a member of my team. And I had those conversations with them and said, this is what I want to do, this is why I want to do it, and here's why I think it is helpful to the business and potentially to you. And that really worked. And, you know, from that moment forward till now, I've noticed a lot more a work-life balance. I've noticed a lot more of an enjoyment for the business. I am more of a working on the business type of guy than in. And now I'm just playing my strengths to my strength of the business. And that's really done good things for us.
Great. So just to clarify, can you give us, let's say, 3 to 5 examples of each? What is working on, in your view, versus working in?
Yeah, well, working on the business, okay, is looking at what's the elevator pitch for the business. Does everybody in my organization, do we all have the same elevator pitch for our value proposition? You know, when we speak to clients, how do we introduce ourselves? You know, what's our brand? Looking at those aspects. Looking at business development. Who are the clients that we want to go after? Who are the clients that we currently have? How are we taking care of them? What's our touch points? How often are we talking with the business owners that we work with? How often are we talking with our clients? How often are we on site? You know, are we doing voice of the customer? We're asking the client, you know, what their needs are, if we're meeting those needs. So it's very much focused on that white glove aspect, as you mentioned, of service. You know, how do we make sure the client realizes that while they're not our only client, that we want them to feel like at every intersection that they are the most important of our clients. So those aspects, really the front aspect of it. You know, the working in the business is, you know, when we go out and we do work, working with clients and we're helping to do, for instance, getting them ready for sale or assessing if they're ready for sale. A lot of the reporting, a lot of the interviewing inside the organization, a lot of the focus group work that we would need to do, a lot of the data analysis, a lot of the drafting of reports, you know, the scheduling of meetings with the client, you know, before we get on site for who are we going to be meeting with and at what time and those pieces. Those things are the working in the business, you know, setting up, you know, my travel schedule, you know, owning my calendar, those types of things that really take up a lot of time and were really robbing me from the opportunity to be more business development focused. And that's what I would say is kind of the, you know, the difference is that, you know, you usually own all of that when you first start out as an entrepreneur, but when you have the opportunity to grow, there are certain things you can let go of.
Right. And let's take a look at some of the higher level things, not just admin and calendaring, but in bringing a team along and sharing sort of your special genius for how you do what you do as you're consulting with clients. How does that get transferred? How does that get shared with the team so that it isn't ultimately just you who's in it actually doing the client service?
Right. You know, there's no shortcut for doing this the old-fashioned way. And what I mean by the old-fashioned way is that, you know, you want to select people who have the right knowledge and the right skill and the right ability to be able to help you lead the business. So we were very specific of the archetype of person that, you know, wanted to have in the business. Someone who had, you know, 10 to 15 years of big company or big consulting, organizational development, organizational effectiveness, talent management, you know, really the people aspect of change management. We set out to look for people who had at least that level of experience. We wanted them to at least have a master's degree, maybe even a doctorate, but we wanted somebody who had been there, done that, where they had gotten results, where we could really point to the work that they were done. So that was the first thing. The second thing is that once we brought them in, we knew that they would have the opportunity to do a lot of the working in of the business that I talked about. They know how to run reports. They know how to do, you know, the data analysis. They know how to draft executive summary. They know how to give presentations. They know how to do all of those things. But the bringing them along is to have them very much so do an OJT or on-the-job training, which are ride-alongs with me. I wanted them to see how I worked with the clients. I wanted them to see how we spoke to and with the clients. I wanted them to see how we would, you know, when we're on site, how do we conduct ourselves? And very specifically, when we're on site, we, as my hallmark, I like to make sure that we thank the client often for the opportunity. We make the time to let them know that we are available to them, that we are a one-call shop, that they make one phone call or send one email, you know, that we do have a, you know, a responsiveness where we're back to the client with any call or any email within a 4-hour. We have a very strict 4-hour SLA because most of our clients, when they need us, they don't have time to wonder if we got the email or when we're going to get back to them. So I wanted them to see the ebb and flow. I wanted them to see the pulse of how I run my business, and I wanted them to see that from me. And after they've seen that, then it allows me to, you know, as new business comes in, not the legacy business, but as new business comes in, to assign one of my team members to own that piece of business from one end to the other. And by doing with the legacy business where I retain that, it minimizes the amount of confusion by the client as to who is really working on their work or who's working on their project. So I keep all of the legacy, and then by the, you know, going back to the working on the business, you know, that legacy business, the success and results we've gotten for them, that turns into testimonials, and it turns in, quite frankly, into how we get, you know, ongoing business or new business, because we don't market. Everything that comes to us has been by referral, which is, you know, really a testament to this team that I have built, where we do good work over and over again for results that now, that's what we sell. We sell results, Nina. When people call us, they're calling us because we've gotten results from someone they know, or, you know, our client list is pretty impressive. You know, when you see, you know, iconically branded organizations, really the Fortune 250 as our client list, to know that we've worked with them and gotten results and we can actually give you names and phone numbers of people that you can call for testimonials, that's powerful. And that only works because I have a team that has bought into the way that I really wanted to run the business.
Great. And so how do you make sure that the team really is buying into that, and that you're, I guess I would call it like a quality control. How do you make sure that that's actually happening within the business?
Well, yes, great. One of the biggest things is that we go very much about voice of the customer. We do a lot of, you know, what I call formative evaluation, where at the conclusion of a milestone of working on a project, let's say it's a year-long project with a client, at the conclusion of a certain milestone, we will do a critical incident method, as I like to call it. We ask the client 3 or 5 questions around how are they feeling with the engagement, how are they feeling specifically about the consultant that's been assigned to them. And that feedback, that real-time, ongoing, formative feedback, has to be in line with where the client is extremely happy for what we're doing. We're trying to create raving fans, and we want them to be raving fans all the way through the time that we're working with them. And that feedback is what allows us to continue to retain the people who work on projects for our clients. That's number one. The second thing is that, you know, the folks that have working for me, they're all 1099 contractors. None of them are employees. So it is very much eat what you kill. And if the client is not satisfied, then that is going to severely impact your compensation to work with that client. So it's very transparent with my team. We know that their scores in terms of being seen by the client as being stellar contributes to their compensation.
Okay. That's certainly an incentive.
Yeah.
And so to jump back, if these people are all 1099s, who's handling the admin and the scheduling and the calendaring and, as you call it, the administrivia that's involved in running a business?
Yes. And so that's the one aspect that we have where we're a little bit unique in the fact of everyone is set up as a 1099. The only employee of the organization is myself, which is, you know, for a lot of reasons, you know, works, allows us to be nimble, allows us to scale up and scale down as client work would be. You know, we have outsourced for our business, for our part of the business, the running of, you know, the payroll and accounting and tax and all those different pieces. You know, we outsource that. I have an administrative assistant who's a 1099 who does the really what I call air traffic control for a lot of these things, of making sure that we're where we need to be, really checking in with this third party to make sure that payroll and things like that, accounts payable, accounts receivable, that those things are on target. But, you know, my admin, Jessica, her whole role is to make sure that, you know, that we're where we need to be, we have what we need, and that if anything, we're, you know, she's basically minding the store while we're out flying around the country and now around the world doing this work. So that's one of the biggest pieces. Before having her and really taking the opportunity to listen in to her suggestions around what we should keep and what we should outsource, we were doing all that in-house, and it was extremely stressful. There were a lot of collisions. There was a lot of trying to remember, you know, certain nuances as things would change from a regulation perspective, tax code, you know, doing business in certain states, there's certain different things that we need to have, making sure that the business owners and errors and omissions insurance is up to date. That's all that administrative stuff that I used to do when it was just me that I said, you know what, I can't worry about this. So because it's taking my time away from working on and building the business. So we've outsourced that piece. It's working for us. We've been doing that now for the better part of a year and a half. And everything seems to be working well. And even with that, we do a quarterly check to make sure that things are where they need to be. We have a quality control piece. I don't like to go more than a quarter in any instance before checking to see how things are working. So that's what we go with, either by milestone or quarter over quarter. I have my fingers to check the pulse of where the organization's where we're going, how solid we are. Are there any things we need to be doing differently? And just use a model of very much of what should we start doing, what should we stop doing, what should we continue doing as kind of an assessment. It just keeps it formative, it keeps it light, it keeps it transparent, and it keeps us nimble.
Mm-hmm. Great. And what's your take on whether you call them policy and procedures manuals, operations manuals, something that in some way codifies that knowledge transfer so that others can step in without needing maybe the same degree of ride-along experience with you, or for some of the lower-level tasks, it's easy for someone to step in and say, yes, I can take on this role and jump in with both feet.
Yeah, I mean, for the work that we do with clients, when one of the folks who works for me and works with me is assigned to be the lead on a project with a client, whether that's new business or repeat business with one of our clients where basically it's another division or something else like that, some other type of division within that client, they own it all the way through from one end to the other. Our process is very repeatable. That's documented for what we do. What is so from an operations manual, you know, the what is very much documented because it is pretty much the same client to client. Certainly the scope, the magnitude, the subject, you know, the results, the deliverables may be different. But the process, the how we, you know, the what we need to do from client to client is really documented. The how is something that there is no real operations manual, procedure manual for the how, because the how is very much about the connection you have with the person. It's very much about, in my mind and what I practice with my team, is that leadership and success for our clients is about connecting with people. So if you can't connect with people, you're not going to be able to get them the results that they want. So from that standpoint, we don't document, you know, how to connect with the client. That's not what we do. You know, there's no PowerPoint slideshow or sock puppets or anything else like that. But what we do is we do document the fact of the types of questions that we should be asking ourselves and asking our clients, you know, that quarter over quarter. And, you know, that might sound like it would be obtrusive and it might sound like, you know, a little bit too much of seeking of feedback. But I disagree, and the fact that that is the reason why we continue to do well is the reason why we get referral is the fact of our clients never feel like they are unimportant to us or they are not top of mind. That's the things that I teach person to person. There are certain members of my team that I know that they do well in connecting with a certain type of client. Maybe they've got, you know, and a personal interest in, let's say, the healthcare space, or they've got a personal background connection to aerospace defense. So I try to make that match as well by really talking with my team and say, who wants to work with this client and why do you want to work with them? What do you think that you're going to be able to deliver to them from not only a what we could do for them, but a how we would do it? And that is more practice than procedure.
Terrific. And you've touched a couple of times on the phrase sort of people issues. And I know you have a favorite saying that most business issues are people issues. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. I think that when you look at organizations that are in trouble, I mean, you can look at, you know, I start my day every morning, you know, 4:30 in the morning watching, hopping back and forth between Bloomberg and CNBC and, you know, seeing as the rest of the world is evolving in the business space. And I do that because, you know, my clients expect me to understand, you know, the external supply and demand pressures that are then levied against their organizations that require them to act differently or to change internally. So most of the business issues that are out there are people issues in the fact that when something happens, making sure that you've got the right people in the right place at the right time with the right skills at the right cost, that's the people issue component. So when we think about, you know, some large-scale organizational change, you know, the organization needs to go in a different direction to either stay competitive or not to be disrupted, or it could be where a business owner says, hey, you know what, I'm ready to sell my business. I'm ready to move on. I want to go do something else. And the first question I would ask is, like, do you have the right people in the business to be able to execute this new organizational strategy? Many times for our clients, the answer is either no or I don't know. So that's people issue number one. If they say that, yeah, I think we have the right people from a cultural standpoint, then I'll ask you, okay, are they in the right roles? You know, are they in the right roles to be able to execute the strategy? And I'm sure you can imagine the conversation keeps going. So are they in the right roles? Do they have the right skills? Are they there at the right time? Meaning, you know, you might need somebody to step into this role tomorrow, but they might be 2 years away from being able to do that from a development standpoint. Do we know that now? How do we plan around that? And then certainly for the right cost is that, you know, one of the biggest costs on any business of any size is the administrative cost, and that's where people live. So if I'm looking at, you know, looking at line items, and I'm looking at, you know, revenue, and I'm looking at cost of goods sold, and I'm looking at SG&A or administrative costs, that's where the people, you know, expense lives. So I would want to find out, are you spending the right amount of money for the talent and for the human resources or human capital that you need, or are you not? Meaning, are you spending money nonstop in headhunter fees when you shouldn't be? Are you spending money nonstop for consultants where you're buying consulting hours but are not leaving breadcrumbs behind for the people who work in your organization to pick up and run with, you know, the follow-on work from the consultants as they depart? So that's just some of the things that we do. And I say that you know, most business issues are people issues because it goes unthought of. It goes unmentioned. People just expect people to work well together. They just expect everything to go well together. But, you know, there's a humanistic component to everything, whether it's a new system install, ERP, CRM, it doesn't matter. You know, at the end of the day, there's a people component. And if any time a business owner or any of our clients is thinking about making some type of a move that is based upon gaining some type of return on investment or some type of, you know, new movement forward, our question to them is, have you thought about how people are going to execute against this new strategy? Have we thought about what is it going to take to get to something we use in our firm called a time to proficiency? You make a change, it's going to take time for the people to adopt this change, incorporate that into the way that they do their work, and be as proficient in this new normal as they were in the previous. And if you don't calculate that, if you don't anticipate that, if you don't build that into your ROI calculations, then you're going to be thinking that the merger or the acquisition or the spinoff or whatever it is, whatever the large-scale organizational change is, if you don't care for the people component of the change up front, you will doom yourself to wonder if the change is taking hold or if it's going to give you the result that you desire.
Wow. And when you think about a successful transition, are there other elements other than the people issues? What should business owners think about? Again, whether they're thinking of stepping away from the business or just bringing in something new, to your point, like technology.
Yeah. Here's something that I would say that really gets to an answer to your question, which is brand. And we all throw the word brand around a lot. But I would ask business owners is this question. Is the brand of your company, the brand of your organization, is it tied to your brand or is the organization have its own brand? Because if your organization's brand is all about you and about how you do work with the client, about what you do on a day-to-day basis, about what you say, about where you go, you can't step away. So your business has to have its own brand. It has to have its own identity. Much like I was talking to a colleague the other day, and it's much like, you know, thinking about being a parent is effective, you know, and I'm blessed to have a 12-year-old daughter. You know, there is a time where it was all about me being, you know, her dad and, you know, and the fact of, you know, that's my daughter, et cetera. But something changes where after a point where they see her first and I happen to be in the background. I think about that from the brand as well. Is the fact of, you know, when I first started the business, it was all about me, and it was all about my brand, and that's what allowed me to get clients, what have you. But after we started to get results, it became about the brand of the organization. And for the business owner, they have to be in a place where they can step back or step away or go away, and the brand of the organization can continue without them having to actually be there. It should not be about, you know, this is John's company anymore. It should be, this is this company, of which John just happens to be the founder or the business owner, much like the analogy with my daughter. It's not about me being her dad. It's about her. And they say, oh, and then they see, oh, who is her father? It's a little bit different because her brand is emerging. Her brand is emerging. The crutch of being on my brand falls away, and her brand emerges. It's like a business. Your business's brand needs to emerge, and your brand needs to fade into the background. And you can only do that, Nina, if you spend more time working on the business and less time working in the business. You have to tout the brand of your organization. You have to tout the results. People get to know the business, not you, but they know the business so that when they need results, they're not reaching for John, they're reaching for fill in the blank company.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. It actually reminds me of this this old Jewish joke where Sadie's walking down the street carrying her 17-year-old and Phyllis comes up and says, oh my God, you're carrying your son. Is everything okay? What's the matter? Can't he walk? And Sadie says, well, of course he can, but why should he? And for a lot of business owners, I'm going to keep carrying that baby and carrying that baby and carrying that baby. But they reach a point where they ideally should be on their own walking without the need of the parent.
Yes.
But very often, business owners sort of hold them back in that way. So wonderful. So, Dr. Odom, as we wrap up, is there anything else that, in terms of words of wisdom, thinking about how we get what we know and what we do out of our heads to be able to share that with our team so that we can better step away, work on the business, and have the business have its own brand and its own continuity?
Yeah, thank you for that. There are a lot of those components that I've mentioned that lend itself to that. But the information component is what has allowed us to really have really good dialogue and good conversations. And I use that word dialogue a lot internally, is that it should be conversation. It should not be where some person is talking at someone. I think as adults, we all know what it feels like to be talked at. But it's very different when you're talked with than talked to. And we want to talk with our clients. We want to talk to the clients. We want to find out, you know, what is it that we're doing well? What are the things we should be doing differently? And we keep all of that. There's something, an old practice that goes way back to the idea of what I call after-action review. It's an old military throwback. And that's after spending 10 years in the Navy, you know, I use a lot of that discipline, a lot of that, you know, good ordered thinking, if you will, in terms of the way that I run my business. And we do after-action review in the fact of after every milestone we achieve, you know, kind of inside the firm, okay, what went well? What didn't go well? We document those things. We document those things. We don't want to make the same mistake twice. And let's be honest, when we first got started, we made a lot of mistakes. We were doing things where, you know, and I have no problem with saying it because we made a lot of mistakes. We were so busy trying to sell to our clients then what we wanted them to have as opposed to asking them what they needed. And that's a mistake that a lot of business owners make. And I joke with people is that you can't sell a hamburger to a vegetarian. You can't. You know, I don't care how you spin it. I don't care what bells and whistles. I don't care how you dress it. I don't care what have you. At the end of the day, your client is a vegetarian. Stop selling them a hamburger. And we had to think about that. Like, damn, we've been selling hamburgers all over the place. No wonder, you know, we're not getting the business that we want. No wonder we're missing out on, we submit for, you know, an RFP comes in, we submit, and we don't succeed or we don't get the business. This is going back a little bit. And we started documenting it. We started asking clients when we didn't get the deal, why didn't we? And we started to, you know, luckily, they were candid with us. Well, we didn't feel like you were really trying to propose a solution that was based on us. You felt like you were trying to propose a solution that would be easy for you to implement. Wow. Talk about getting hit right between the eyes. And that was powerful. It was very powerful. And it made us think about the fact, okay, let's ask what the client wants. Let's understand their current supply and demand pressures. Let's understand their internal culture. Let's get away from, quote unquote, best practice and think about what would work best for the client. We started to document those things. And we started to, you know, really categorize when we think about pre-deal, you know, when we're starting to work with the client, kind of like the intake, then through working with the client, and then through the transition, which is where we work to give ownership of any solutions or follow-on back to the client, because, you know, they're paying for us to help them get from point A to point B. But at the end of that, we want to make sure that they have the roadmap of how they got there. We want to make sure they know what we recommend as the next things for them that they could do on their own or work with us. Those are all the things that we've done. So that knowledge transfer, to answer your question, it's about asking the tough questions. It's about being willing to hear the answers that might not be the ones you want. It's about writing down, documenting, and reviewing your successes, your failures, and mapping out a way how you want to take your business to the next level in terms of how do you give your clients more of what they want and what they need as opposed to what you want them to have.
Well, all great, great wisdom around working on and not in the business, how to move yourself out of it, thinking about company branding. And as you say, that after action review to really dive into what went well and what didn't so that you continue to do what went well instead of making the same mistakes
yes.
over again. So Dr. Odom, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your service. And thanks for being on Cash Out Big.
Thank you so much, Nita. I really appreciate it. I was looking forward to this. And to you and to your listeners, a very happy new year. Let's all go out and have an outstanding 2017.
And thank you for tuning in to Cash Out Big. Do you sometimes feel like you're running so fast in your business, you're stuck on a giant hamster wheel? I put together a special training that'll show you how to take control once and for all. You can get the Cash Out Big video training and more great resources at businessexponential.com. Go there now, and I'll see you on the next podcast.